Hello, fair listeners. A quick message before we start the show today. It is that time of year again for us to vote for our favorite wrestler and match of the year. So please look at the links in the show notes so that you can vote as well along with us. Our next episodes will be featured on the top 10 wrestlers and matches of the year. So when you're trying to vote, think about not just kayfabe success, although that is part of it, but also think about which matches and wrestlers really had the biggest and brightest moments of the year, which things exceeded your expectations, and which felt the most important. That's kind of what I'm looking at. And again, one of the reasons that you want to vote, not just because you want your voice heard, is because there is a prize that's going to be given away randomly to one lucky winner, and that's a $50 gift card to Pro Wrestling Tees. Pro Wrestling Tees is the best website for wrestling merch in general, and you can get some pretty good stuff for 50 bucks there. So go to the show notes. We have the links to the voting there. That's on our website, muchadowrestling.com. I also want to mention, if you vote for Wrestler of the Year, that gets you one entry into this contest. If you vote for Match of the Year, that gets you another entry into the contest. But if you leave a podcast review for our podcast on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher, you're going to gain an additional 5 entries. That's going to put your odds way up, as Scott Steiner would say. Just make sure that you take a picture of the screenshot of your review. Usually takes about a day or two for those to show up in the actual Apple Store. And then you want to email that picture to muchadowrestling@gmail.com so that we can give you those 5 additional entries into the contest. We will announce the winner of this contest on the episode where we talk about the top 10 wrestlers and matches of the year. So make sure you listen to that. Make sure you enter today. You got a week. The window closes on May 24th. That's a Friday. So make sure to get in there now and make sure that your voice is heard and that you can be the one walking away with that $50 gift card. Okay, now on to the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show where climbing ladders as slowly as possible is completely normal and definitely not devastating to your suspension of disbelief. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is Mr. Money in the Bank, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you feeling?
I am good, Andrew. I felt that was a little stretch on that one. You got to be careful Whenever you have me write the run sheets, man. We got some.
I think that was the longest one in like terms of word count.
Yeah, but I'm doing good, man. A little under the weather, so. Mm-hmm. The voice isn't in tip-top shape, but that's okay. Yeah, we're still going to do it. We got to do it for the listeners.
Yeah, you were medically cleared, unlike Alexa Bliss.
Ooh, so sad face.
I didn't mean that to be like a dig at her.
Topical. Did it say what she was not cleared for?
No, I'm kind of scared. For those that are listening, I'm sure you've already got the news. It was kind of breaking to us while recording that Alexa Bliss was taken out of the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match coming up this Sunday. Has she been in any matches since her concussion issue? Was this going to be her?
I believe
comeback?
She may have had like a random off match on Raw or something like that, but
yeah,
I don't think nothing of note. And unfortunately, the last time that she was out for so long was, I believe, for concussions. Yeah. So
maybe they're just being overly cautious.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I hope that she is okay. I don't want to see both her and Paige like unable to compete. But there will still be 2 ladder matches this weekend. As of right now, just 2. We can always, the card's subject to change. So that is what we're going to talk about today, is the ladder match itself. A little bit later on, we're also going to do some looking at the Money in the Bank ladder match in particular. And then at the end, we're going to do a little AEW talk because it's too tantalizing not
to. I mean,
to.
How could we not?
Yeah. Yeah, we have to do that. But first, we're going to get into ladder matches. Tyler, do you want to give us the definition of ladder match?
Absolutely, yes. So, a ladder match. You'd think the name kind of explains it itself, but there's a little more nuance here. So a ladder match is a type of match in professional wrestling. Most commonly where an item, it's usually a title belt, sometimes a briefcase, is hung above the ring, and the winner is the contestant who climbs a ladder and retrieves said item. Now, with a ladder match, the ladder itself becomes a key feature of the match, as wrestlers will use the ladder as a weapon to strike their opponents. As we've seen with a lot of like smaller cruiserweights, they use it as a launching pad for some cool, as they would say in the business, flippy stuff.
Yeah.
and frequently, these matches, they have a lot of like big falls from like the top of the ladder, whether it be through tables or into the ring or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say that the term planned spot, which we've talked about before, like the idea of having a very specific beat that you have to get to in a match, almost like a roadmap. So like the rest of the match might be called on the fly, but there are these planned spots that are very specific and people have to hit their marks. Is it fair to say that the ladder match created that term?
I would say, yeah, probably, because the ladder match traditionally it was one of the first really kind of breaking out of the norm for professional wrestling matches, where wrestling matches, they were traditional, wrestling matches, a pinfall or submission. When they started introducing these, as I guess you would call them, gimmick matches, it started to get more out there, and like the ideas were really kind of weird at the time. And so you could set up these beats, these spots, if you will. I think the ladder match is the best for setting up table spots, even better than a table match in a weird
yeah,
way.
Yeah, table matches are weird.
Yeah. Because in the ladder matches, they're so great in that you can set up a table on the outside, like multiple tables, and having the element of the ladder there, that it's going to be so much bigger than if it was just someone went through a table like outside of the ring. But
Exactly. It's funny you mentioned that it's the first. You're kind of saying that it's like the first really gimmicky gimmick match, because before that,
I would say, yeah, I guess cage match probably came before that, but
a cage match even still just a wrestling match.
Yeah,
like because people jumping off of the cage and bumps off the cage really weren't a thing until the mid to late 90s, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, I guess like in the 80s you have, because I mean my memory goes back to like Jimmy Snuka doing like
you're right.
The cage or something.
You're right. And that was in the 80s? Was it in the 70s actually?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I'm going to look that up because I don't want to get it wrong. That's Jimmy Snuka diving off of a cage onto Don Morocco in Madison Square
Hitting
Garden
a super fly, yeah, off the
with
cage.
With Mick Foley in the audience. that was in 1983.
Okay.
So you're right. It was in the 80s.
Yes.
So like, so you got to think that the first real bump in a gimmick match wasn't until 1983. And then for a while, I feel like no one attempted stuff like that because it was like, well, we're not like Jimmy Snuka.
Even back in the day, cage matches were pretty tame.
Yeah, they were more like brutal in a sense, or they were more like a storyline, like contrivance to keep interfering people out or to keep a coward in the ring. It wasn't used so much as a weapon, more as like a setting. And then the ladder match is the first gimmick match, really, I guess, that says, well, what if the entire point of this was to really suspend the disbelief? Because the ladder match is an inherently unbelievable premise, I think, from the beginning. Have you ever, I know we've talked before about times where we sit down with someone who's never seen any wrestling and we like pick a match to show them. Are ladder matches or TLC matches ones that you have shown people, and how do they understand it, or is the logic too far of a jump?
I think in a weird way, specific, like for a ladder match, in a weird way, it could be easier to understand, I think, because when a traditional wrestling match, like there's multiple ways to win with like pinfalls and submissions, but then you also have to factor in like rope breaks and like roll-ups and near falls and stuff. And in my experience, for a non-wrestling fan or someone who's new to professional wrestling, just a traditional match has all of these different elements in it that can be a little overwhelming, where in a weird way, a ladder match is very straightforward. Like there's one way to win. It's whoever climbs the ladder and gets what's hanging from the rafters. Like that's it.
Yeah. I think you are right in that. I guess if you take out all of the kind of grounded realism or like rules of a wrestling match, mm-hmm. that it's easy to be like, well, this is a ladder match. What does that mean? First person to grab something off the top of the ladder wins. So I guess you're right. It is easier that way. But I think like the one question, I know we're kind of going out of order here, the question that I always hear is like, why are they climbing so slowly, or why in a multi-person ladder match, why is someone like hit with one move and then not seen of for like 5 minutes? Yeah.
Why is Roman sleeping on the outside?
Yeah, exactly. And I think I refer to this as like going off stage. If you think of the ring as like a theater in the round.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, but I think it is because you have to get from spot to spot. It is either like, well, we can't pull focus, mm-hmm. or it is that these spots are incredibly dangerous. Which one do you think it's kind of closer to?
it's a weird mixed bag there. I like that you brought up the phrase pulling focus, because I think that's what a lot of it is about. In gimmick matches, like ladder matches and stuff, it is about these beats that you build up to, these planned spots that you want to make happen. And mm-hmm. pulling focus for these is the best way to do that for your audience, essentially. Because it's we've talked about this before, it's tougher when you have just a match with two opponents. That's it. Because there is no pulling focus from anyone else. There's just the two. So you're going to painstakingly watch every second of them setting up tables and moving ladders and things like that. But when you have like multiple man matches, you can have people take a move, roll to the outside where the focus is now on someone else. And then on the outside, they could be setting up tables for a spot that's about to come up later or something like that. I think in terms of these matches, that's probably the main part. Personally, that's how it comes across to me. Yeah.
I will say too, though, that I miss these, that back in the day, if you bought a wrestling DVD to date myself, or if you were watching a pay-per-view.
Or a VHS.
Yeah, VHS. If you were watching pay-per-view, the first thing you would see is the Don't Try This at Home video, where they'd be like, please don't let us get sued because you did wrestling moves at home. And now I'm trying to think back to those, and so many of the clips from, because it used to just be like, here are clips of wrestlers getting hurt.
Yeah,
and
I remember
most
those,
of them were from ladder matches or TLC matches. That was like a big part of it. Yeah. Like I just have implanted into my head Jim Ross screaming like, it's like a car crash, or it's like, how do you fall off a 20-foot ladder? I think that's the like the one that was in there.
Yeah.
So I do think it is a tough gimmick match to fake. Mm-hmm. And I know that the ladders that they use are, you know, ladders you can buy at Home Depot, who are not a sponsor of the show. I guess you can buy a ladder at any kind of
no affiliation to Home Depot.
Yeah, home improvement store. So I would love to get a wrestler to sit down with us and talk about how much pain is involved in a ladder match compared with other gimmick matches. I think I'd be curious to hear.
Yeah, or even I'd like to hear like how much planning, I guess, goes into a ladder match, or really any gimmick match. Like whether or not is it planning out the spots, is it so much more meticulous for something like that, where the risk factor can be so much higher?
I think I've heard And this isn't technically a ladder match. This is a variant of it, the TLC match we've talked about before, is that I know I've heard the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys in interviews before talking about how they would put those matches together. And they may have been unique because those three teams had a particular bond to each other. But I know that they talked about that each member would come into a room and be like, here are like two spots that I pitch. And they would all like pick the spots and decide what order they went in. And that was that. And then Michael Hayes would be there as the agent next to them, suggesting more and more ridiculous things for them to jump off of. That is how I've heard it characterized, because he knew he wasn't going to be the one jumping off of the stuff.
Definitely.
But we've jumped ahead in the history of the ladder match a lot. I guess let's start at the beginning and let's talk about the first ladder match in history. What did you find? Where did you find it was from, Tyler?
So this is, I got to cite Wikipedia here. The Wikipedia page on ladder matches is very in-depth. They have a lot of great info on there.
Yeah.
But according to the scholars over there, they said that the first ladder match that anyone seems to have record of was in 1972 for Stampede Wrestling.
Mm-hmm. It's in Canada, right? Stampede's
Canadian
promotion?
Yeah. Might have been Winnipeg.
Yeah. I'm going to sound like Canadian racist where I'm like, that's a Stu Hart like promotion, right? But I just think that because
it very well might be.
It was Stu Hart. Okay.
Yes,
I'm not a Canadian racist.
You're just right.
Hart. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's seems to be the record, the first record anyone has of a ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anything about that before I read this myself, so I'm not sure if it was the same, like, exact stipulations of a ladder match, where, like, you climb to the top and grab what's ever hanging to win, but I believe it was the first match that incorporated a ladder.
Yeah, it seems to be foggy about it a bit on the Wikipedia, which, you know, never happens on Wikipedia.
No.
I do want to point out, they said it was maybe invented by Dan Crawford, is the Canadian retired wrestler who maybe was the one who came up with this, or maybe it was British wrestler Kendo Nagasaki, which is the most British name I've ever heard. I want to just read this sentence verbatim. And again, like, people, if you're listening to this and you're at a computer, you should pull up the ladder match Wikipedia, because it is a ball. So the idea with this first ladder match was that the object to be grabbed was a wad of money, which we've seen kind of repeated if a title isn't on the line.
Uh-huh.
But then a little bit later, they did a disco challenge ladder match where the aim was to receive a gold disco record suspended above the ring.
Oh, my God.
And I love that it says that happened in 1987, like long after disco had run its course. So if anyone has video of this match from World of Sport, I mean, it probably exists because World of Sport, is archived. Yeah. If you want to see Kendo Nagasaki in a match against
the great Myers, British wrestler,
Kendo Nagasaki. Yeah. Well, okay. His birth name was Brian Stevens. So that makes sense out of that. But I want to see that disco one. I can tell you, I didn't tell you this until right now. This is a shock to you, Tyler. I have found footage from a 1979 Stampede ladder match. So I can tell you kind of what they look like.
Okay.
And I'll link this in the show, in the show notes, too, so people can see it. It was on WWE's YouTube account. It's buried in there. And it's Big Daddy Ritter and Jake Roberts, a very young Jake Roberts, who are in this match. And there is a referee who's in T-shirts and jeans, and there's another guy in T-shirt and jeans who is holding the ladder up while they wrestle. And the ladder is not in the middle of the ring. The ladder is also not double-sided. It's like it's a fireman's ladder.
Yeah, just a fire. Oh, okay.
And he's just, like, holding it, which is kind of crazy. When Big Daddy Ritter is climbing up the ladder, there is just this, like, intern-looking guy holding it so that he can get up to the rafters to get the money. And let me tell you, he climbs this ladder so fast in terms of, like, how slow wrestlers climb ladders now.
Today, yeah.
Which has become, like, a painful art form.
Mm-hmm.
But that was those were the first kind of impetuses of the ladder match. But it seems like it was very regional. It wasn't something that big promoters at the time would even dream about bringing in, because I feel like the ladder match was a thing to get people in the town to be like, they're going to wrestle on a ladder. I guess I'll pay $10 to go see that. If you were a big promoter, you had TV and you didn't need to do as much gimmickry in the time. But eventually it made its way into Jim Crockett Promotions and WCW at the Great American Bash in 1987, where Dusty Rhodes defeated Tully Blanchard in a ladder match. I have not seen this match. Have you, Tyler?
I have not. I would certainly like to. I'm always a good fan of a great Dusty match.
Yeah, it does not shock me that someone who would bring a gimmick match to WCW is Dusty Rhodes. That's
right.
Kind of what we live for. I think it is interesting, too, that Tully Blanchard is the opponent, because he is someone who, even if this wasn't the majority of his career, I think he's someone that younger fans like us remember for being a gimmick match wrestler, actually. Because like, I think of the one Tully Blanchard match I've seen a million times is Tully Blanchard Magnum TA, the I Quit match. That's like the standard bearer for that. But that's for the I Quit match episode.
we'll get to that.
So it gets into WCW. WCW in its run only did 11 ladder matches, though. So it still wasn't being used that frequently there. The real standard bearer for the modern ladder match, which is weird to say because I feel like it doesn't look anything like a ladder match in today, is Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 10.
Yep.
Now, this one I know you've seen.
Oh, yes, many times.
Why? This is one that's been referred to. It's on a lot of like lists as still the number one or number two best ladder match of all time. What makes it so good?
So I think for this specific match, and a lot of people, I honestly, myself included, I thought that this was the first ladder match that they did in WWE. After doing some research, we found out there was actually a previous ladder match that they had a couple, like 2 years before, but no one really remembers that one.
It seems like Bret Hart was the one who kind of brought the idea to Vince, because he was like, he's probably like, hey, my uncle, my dad used to do this match sometimes.
So this one, the Razor Ramon Shawn Michaels one, is the most, I guess, remembered one. And I think the many factors, number one being that this was the first ladder match that happened at WrestleMania. So that in itself was huge. And it was for the undisputed WWF Intercontinental Championship, which I like the finer points of this storyline are I don't know all of them,
but
what I remember is that both of them had an Intercontinental Championship. Exactly.
Yeah. And they had to be the rightful champion.
They had to unify them to find out who was the rightful champion. And like, I think this might have been Shawn Michaels was the Intercontinental Champion, left like during one of his spats of leaving. Razor Ramon became the new Intercontinental Champion. Shawn Michaels returned with the Intercontinental Championship belt he left with and was like, nah, I'm still champ. So they had to unify them.
You got it exactly right, actually.
See, you can kind of piece it together.
Yeah, the idea was that Michaels was legitimately hurt. And Jack Tunney, who was the storyline president of WWE at that time, stripped him of the title.
Yeah.
And then he was good enough to come back and was like, oh, actually, I am the champion. So he, like, the idea was that even though Razor was officially the champion, Michaels refused to acknowledge that. And he was like, hey, I am still the champion. So it became like, okay, well, let's, like, see who the best champion is. I think that this match is remembered so well because you had the two, really like two of the only athletic people on the roster at the time. You also had Owen Hart and Bret Hart. And really beyond that, like even someone like British Bulldog couldn't move that well. This was kind of in a weird time for the company. And you had the two most athletic people given this gimmick match, and they turned it. They took, okay, we're going to do a ladder match. Well, let's make it an athletic showcase. And I wonder what it would have been like if two different people on the roster were given that match instead. you know, like, would we have ever seen the kind of people excelling in this match? Because maybe they wouldn't have got the opportunity to be given this spot. So I think a lot of people, a lot of the smaller wrestlers really are in debt to Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, who Razor Ramon is not a small guy, but like could move. I think they're in debt to them for turning this particular match into a showcase of truly athletic people.
Mm-hmm.
So you should all watch that match. It's got it does seem tame compared to today's standards, but there are some really big splashes, and it's important in that it establishes the visual language for the at-home viewers, and that it does have the like the Wile E. Coyote cam, as I've heard it referred to, and shots from above the ring. And I think that that's really what made the legitimate danger of the match translate, is that it's so much scarier to watch someone fall a great distance to the mat from overhead.
Yeah. Which I love that camera angle whenever they do those shots. So great.
Yeah. So that was kind of the history of it. And then from there, the ladder match is popularized in the mid to late 90s, particularly on WWF television, by the likes of young people looking to break out, like the Hardys, the Edge and Christians of the world, the Dudley Boys. But they end up making their own thing. They make the tables, ladders, and chairs match. I'm more interested in the basic ladder match right now. So what are the matches that come to mind to you, Tyler, when you think ladder match? What are your favorites? What are your duds?
So, honestly, for me, one of my favorite ladder matches, and it's just because it was generally one of the first ones I think I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's a match that will never be spoken of in WWE.
Yep.
And that's because the participants were Chris Jericho and one Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
And this was at the Royal Rumble 2001, I believe.
You're correct. For New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yes, for the Intercontinental Championship. Now, this was an amazing match for me, and I remember it always because they had these amazing spots. The one that sticks out to me most is there's a spot in the match where Chris Jericho puts Chris Benoit in the Walls of Jericho submission, which is essentially a Boston Crab over the top of the ladder while it's up. Yeah. It's the most amazing shot I think I've ever seen in a ladder match. But so that one sticks out to me the most. Unfortunately, it's one that'll never be spoken of. And it's interesting. I've heard interviews with Chris Jericho himself where he talks about that match, saying like that's to him personally, that's one of the best matches he's had in his career. But it's unfortunate that, you know, they'll never acknowledge it.
Exactly. It's funny because for me, all the ones that I think of too are also one-on-one ladder matchups, which is there's way more multi-man clustered scramble kind of matches like we're going to see at Money in the Bank. But I think it is a match where you can suspend your disbelief of like them climbing slowly and them being exhausted more if it's just two people who are taking this. So the ones that I think of, I love, there's one from Raw. Actually, both of the ones that I really love were on episodes of Monday Night Raw. I think maybe the most important match in one of the competitors' entire career, honestly, is The Undertaker, who was the WWE Undisputed Champion at the time, facing off against a very young and still not pushed Jeff Hardy. This was July 1st, 2002. This is my favorite episode of Monday Night Raw from front to back that I've ever watched. That's my high praise. It was the most the most that I ever felt in the moment, like, oh my God, they're actually going to do this title change and switch it. And you can feel that energy in there. Am I crazy or do you remember this match as well?
So I actually don't.
Oh, no. I know what you're doing tonight.
I know. I'm definitely going to look this up, though. That's for sure.
Because this is pre the Hardy Boys breaking up, so it's still like this is before
Mr. Caberline's greatest episode of Raw ever. I mean, I gotta watch.
There's
it.
There's some good Tommy Dreamer stuff in it too, if I remember correctly. Because it's like very early brand split. But yeah, it is. Jeff does an amazing promo in this episode of Raw because, which is crazy. But Jonathan Coachman or Michael Cole are interviewing him in a pre-tape before the match, being like, you know, do you actually think you have a shot at winning this? And he gives the most impassioned like speech that we've ever heard out of a guy who's like particularly quiet. And him and The Undertaker put on an amazing match, and it kind of proves that a big guy can also be valuable in a ladder match as well. And I almost wonder, I don't know this for sure, but I have a feeling that it's the kind of thing where some people backstage were saying like, hey, Jeff is a star, we got to push him. And some people were not convinced, and they said, well, let's see how he does in this. And I think after that, you see a concentrated effort to make him a huge star. The other one I was going to say from Raw, and it may have been the same year. Wow, it was a year later. It was September 29th, 2003, on an episode of Raw. And this is Rob Van Dam and Christian in a ladder match for the WWE Intercontinental title. Mm-hmm. This had no build. It was just kind of thrown out there as like a match to be on Monday Night Raw. It's one of Christian's best matches. RVD does the most scary thing I've ever seen in a ladder match, where he does a 5-star frog splash from a ladder that is in the ring to Christian, who is laying on the mat, and RVD does it from the top of the ladder.
The like very top rung,
he gets his 2 feet, he like climbs up, gets there and does it. And he falls for so long, and it's terrifying. So those are the two I would say. Yeah, those are the two that I would say to check out. And then I know that I've talked about this in the show before when we did our TLC episode, but the Dolph Ziggler Luke Harper ladder match from TLC and S, because it was tables, ladders, chairs, and stairs. this is from 2014. Dolph Ziggler in his hometown, Cleveland, Ohio, has one of the most brutal matches on modern WWE TV, in a match where Luke Harper breaks his arm legitimately, oof, like 5 minutes in, and then they go at each other. So those are the three that I would recommend. There are a bunch of multi-man ones that are really, really like ridiculous that you can check out as well. There's a really good New Day Lucha Dragons Usos one from a few years ago with the what's Kalisto's finishing move?
Oh, the Salida del Sol.
Yeah, that he does off to the top
one of the Usos.
Ladder.
Yeah. That was the spot of the year. I remember.
Yes, it was the spot of the year. Yeah. So there you go.
Got the Slammy Award. Mm-hmm.
There are 53 ladder matches, is what I'm saying, in the history of WWE televised TV. So those are just a few of them. But even the worst ones, I feel like, have something to love. Mm-hmm. Like the slap together 4-way one, I want to say, at Armageddon, where Joey Mercury gets his nose broken.
Oh my. Ooh. Yeah, that is a brutal one.
Yeah. And is it like a seesaw?
That was the seesaw effect where it was I believe it was Matt Hardy. Mm-hmm. They had set the ladder in between the ropes, like at an angle.
Yeah.
And Matt Hardy had jumped to hit like the end that was sticking up to cause a seesaw effect. And
to
the end
the
that
other
was
people
coming
in the face.
Up.
Yeah.
Caught Joey Mercury in the face and just destroyed his face.
Yeah, he did not.
I think
realize...
I might have watched that live. not there, awesome. But like I watched it on TV while it was happening live, and because I remember just being like, oh my god, there's just so much blood quickly.
It's interesting to watch because he knows that this is the spot, but he doesn't realize that Jeff or Matt, whichever one it is, has jumped already.
Yes.
So he just sits there. And like gets
and takes it
destroyed.
And his in it the and the how quickly his face just swells up and becomes like unrecognizable. It's
I think
wild.
He I think he stays off stage for the rest of that match after that.
Oh no, yeah, I think he might very well like they walk him to the back. Like. Yeah.
We've kind of already gone through some of the normal beats of a ladder match. Are there any like really big ones that we are? I guess we should talk about that. Almost every finish of a ladder match involves both competitors at the top of the ladder together trading punches.
Yes.
Typically. Is this a spot that you like or dislike?
It's tough because the alternative is it's just a singular person climbing the ladder to grab the prize. Mm-hmm. And now there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but that in itself, it's such a delayed sort of, you know, reaction sort of thing where like you see them climbing, you're just like, oh, okay, and he got it. Mm-hmm. But when you have two people up there trading blows back and forth, you're like, oh no, who's going to fall off? Oh, he's getting hit. And then eventually it goes that way. Now, granted, I have seen times where they do it pretty well. That going back to that Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit ladder match that from the Royal Rumble, the finish of that match is Benoit is on the top of the ladder and he's reaching for it. Chris Jericho is on the mat and he like runs up and pushes the ladder, where Benoit hits the ropes, falls to the outside of the ring. And so as Jericho sets up the ladder and he's climbing up the rungs to get to the belt, the shot, the camera shot is then from the outside is Benoit scrambling to try and get back into the ring, and he's pulling on the apron, he's trying to pull himself up and he can't quite get there. And like, so like, it can be done right, but yes, typically it is the two guys at the top trading blows.
I have a fun game that I'm going to quiz you on in a second. But before that, let's take just a minute to talk about the ladder match has given birth to a lot of very similar matches that you might be like, well, that's a ladder match, right? And we'd be like, not technically. We've talked about TLC before, so I feel like we've talked that to death. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Money in the Bank in just a second. There are three other ones that come to mind for me. I'm going to list them. Tell me if you think any of these are actually good. And maybe we can like talk about what this match is. So there's the King of the Mountain match.
I don't know exactly what that is.
That was a TNA creation.
Is that something to do with Jeff Jarrett?
Yep. Jeff Jarrett, King of the Mountain, because he won that match a bunch of times. Okay. That's the one that's a ladder match where there are pinfalls. And if you get pinned, you have to go to a hockey-style penalty box for 3 minutes.
Okay.
So it's still a ladder match where like you got to climb get the title, but like you can pin people to like make it so there's less people in the match.
Interesting.
There's a lot of rules.
Yeah.
And I think I want to say that actually the problem with it is that the rules are really convoluted. I think it was a reverse ladder match. I think you had to take the title and be the one to climb the ladder and hang it.
You had to hang it. No, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
I think you had to pin someone or submit someone once before you were eligible to
do
it.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So AJ Styles does a lot of great work in a bunch of those matches, though. There's the Stairway to Hell match, which was ECW's version of the reverse ladder match, or the regular ladder match, where there would be a weapon suspended, and the first person to climb was able to use the weapon, and then it was a regular match. This was a creation of Tommy Dreamer and Just Incredible. They had a series of matches of these. There's a particular moment that I think is on a lot of the ECW stuff that is, I think it's Justin giving it to Tommy and not the other way around off the ladder. He does like a diamond cutter to the mat, a big blue mat at one of their pay-per-views. And then there's the Ultimate X match.
Is Ultimate X a ladder match?
Well, it's a ladder match without a ladder. Is how I remember okay, it being good. Pitched as being like, what if the people were so athletic that they didn't need a ladder to go up there and get a belt?
Yeah.
So this was one where there were two cables suspended, making an X above the ring, and the belt was hung in the middle of that. And wrestlers would like climb up and shimmy across like they were trying to get up to a zip line course. Yep.
I was always a big fan of the Ultimate X matches. I actually really liked those. I thought they were creative.
Can you kind of describe? There's one moment of those I remember, and it's the AJ Styles.
It's the AJ
bump.
Styles one. Yes.
Can you kind of explain what happens to that? It's hard to explain without showing it.
Yeah. So that moment is AJ Styles. He has climbed up to the cables and has shimmied his way across, and he's almost to the belt. And I want to say Chris Sabin.
Yeah.
It could be someone else in that.
Michael
like,
Shane.
Early
some
2000s
other forgotten
era
X Division
TNA.
Person. Yeah.
But so whoever it is springboards off the ropes from the outside and drop kicks AJ in like the chest as he's hanging. and this causes him to like let go of the cables and fall forward. But as he's falling forward, like he tucks in to land on his back, but very late, and like at no point are you like, is this going to end well?
Yeah, it looks so natural. It looks like he just gets hit and the like force of the cable shaking like slams him. It's bizarre, and I hope no one ever does that ever again.
Yes, yes. But I still very much like the Ultimate X matches. I thought it was, of the weird things that TNA tried to do, that was a genuinely fun one.
Yeah, much better than the King of the Mountain.
King of the Mountain.
So here's what I want to quiz you on. I hope you haven't looked at the Wikipedia too hard.
Okay.
Is in WWE history, who would you guess kayfabe-wise are the best wrestlers of ladder matches? Because a lot of times they'll like the commentators will mention that one wrestler is more skilled or is like better experienced in a ladder match than the other, and that doesn't really matter. So just who are the people, if you had to guess, the top five most victories?
So I will say I do know who number one is, but he was going to be my guess regardless.
Yeah.
And that being, of course, Jeff Hardy.
Yes, Jeff Hardy has 7 victories on WWE television. I think he's probably got a few more from TNA.
Probably,
in ladder matches. He's 7-12, which is honestly a better winning percentage than I would have thought.
That's in
straight ladder matches.
Yes, which is a pretty good percentage.
Yeah. Who would you guess is number two?
As to the other ones, see, this is where it gets tough. If I had to guess, because we're talking about all time here.
This is all time televised on WWE specifically.
So, oh boy, I would.
I want to say before you guess, I said that there were 53 current to date, and Jeff Hardy's been in 12 of them.
Right.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So I want to say either Edge or CM Punk.
Edge is in a 5-person tie for that fifth spot.
Okay.
I didn't put him there because he had a worse winning percentage than two of the other people.
Oh no.
Okay. He has 3 wins out of 6. Edge does. CM Punk,
I know he's at least won 2 Money in the Bank matches.
Yeah. Is he not? Did someone scrub him off of this list?
Oh, no.
Maybe. I don't see him on here.
Interesting.
Maybe this doesn't count the Money in the Bank ones, which is interesting, because maybe those are the only two that he's been in.
Yeah.
He's been in some TLCs. Maybe he hasn't been in a regular old ladder match.
Okay, then, because if they don't include Money in the Bank matches, one of my guesses was going to be Chris Jericho.
Chris Jericho is the number 4 in the top 5.
Yes,
he has been in 3 regular old ladder matches, and he's won all 3 of them.
Look at those numbers.
So this does not include Money in the Bank ladder matches, then.
Look at those numbers. You know, because I knew that he has never won Money in the Bank.
So you've got 2 of the top 5.
Okay.
Who else would you guess in there?
Oh, man. I'm not going to guess Shawn Michaels because he does not have a good history of ladder matches.
No, he does not. I see exactly where he is on the list. It's not that high.
Yeah, I'm not going to guess that. Oh boy. It can't be a bad thing to guess Matt Hardy.
That's number
Hardy
3.
Boy.
He's 4-7. I believe he has a victory over Jeff at a WrestleMania in one of those as well.
Okay. Yeah. And man, I got to be honest, I'm blanking.
Yep. I'm going to give you number 2 with an impressive 5 out of 6 for victories is Rob Van Dam.
Oh, that makes sense.
And then the one that you never would have got, this is the part of that huge tie of people who have 3 victories. So Christian is 3-8. Okay. Dolph Ziggler's 3-6. Edge is 3-6. Jericho's 3-3. Also 3-3 and rounding out the top 5. Triple H.
What?
I can't remember him ever being in a
ladder match. Remember a ladder match with Triple
H. I would
guess
they're probably all in 98 or 99.
Okay.
But they're in there. Kurt Angle went a perfect 2-2 in his career. And right now, Seth Rollins is 2-2. So maybe that's someone who can become known for their ladder matches.
Interesting.
But this Sunday,
I just pulled up the Wikipedia page, and I can't help but notice that who else has a perfect record in ladder matches is one Mr. McMahon.
Really? Is he one for one?
He is one for one, yeah. As well as his son Shane.
I'm looking at the people who are over, Shelton Benjamin is 0 for 3, and Sheamus is 0 for 3. So that's the most appearances without a victory guys. When Shelton is someone
who shocking
is,
that...
Yeah.
Yes, that Shelton does not have a win.
Shelton is someone who's been a star of the Money in the Bank ladder match the way that like Kofi has been a star of the Royal Rumble. So let's get to Money in the Bank. Can you give us how this particular ladder match was formed?
Yes.
And,
yes,
what's unique about it?
Absolutely. So the Money in the Bank match, it is a ladder match. It's a unique ladder match in that every Money in the Bank match will have anywhere from 5 to 8, sometimes 9 competitors. It's always more than 2 people. And the briefcase that's suspended above the ring that one of them has to grab contains a contract for... redeemable for one championship match whenever the holder chooses, that expires after 1 year from the night they win it. And the first Money in the Bank match actually occurred at WrestleMania 21. It was the kayfabe machination of Chris Jericho. I don't know if that was like actually his idea, or I remember him like coming out on Raw or something and, you know, pitching this idea. So it could be legit. It could just be a kayfabe thing.
I believe he's taking credit for it legitimately as well.
Okay. Maybe. I wouldn't put it past him. Chris Jericho's a virtuoso when it comes to pro wrestling stuff like that. But so that first Money in the Bank match was actually won by Edge. And Edge then held the briefcase for about 9 months. He cashed in at New Year's Revolution that following January. And he cashed in on the current WWE champion at the time, John Cena, who had just competed in an Elimination Chamber match, which I think we might have explained the Elimination Chamber. It's like one of the most brutal, devastating matches where they have to survive 5 other competitors. So at the end of the match, John Cena is like visibly just winded and beaten down. And then Edge comes out. Now, this one, it's important for the first Money in the Bank cash-in because people were still kind of unsure how this worked, basically. And so when Edge cashed in then, after this really just exhausting match that John Cena had gone through, it sets a tone for really the term cashing in and how the Money in the Bank can be used as a tool for a heel. So Edge cashes in on John Cena. I think I remember he hits one spear. John Cena amazingly kicks out, hits a second, 1, 2, 3. Edge wins his first ever WWE championship.
Yeah. And it felt like a fans throwing garbage booing kind of moment. It felt like real heat because it felt like something that wasn't allowed because you're right. The rules were not established yet. And it's funny because in my mind, I remembered Rob Van Dam's Money in the Bank being before that, because I like in my mind it made more logical sense to first have him win the Money in the Bank and say I want to cash this in at this particular pay-per-view like in this match that we can now build to, and then that's why it was so shocking when Edge did it. But I guess that is my mind has corrected this for me. I think I also remember
that happening because I believe the following night on Raw is when Edge and Lita did their infamous live sex celebration.
Yeah, that's something maybe we should review that at like Valentine's Day next year or something like that. That's a weird,
the most
dark time.
Scandalous moments.
Yeah. Almost every wrestler has cashed it in the way that Edge has rather than Rob Van Dam, even if they are a face. Like that tends to be the way it goes. I kind of wish that we had a few more people who would cash it in at a specific event. I kind of miss that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it? Are the cashing in, do they still feel surprising to you, or do they feel cheap?
Just because the money in the bank hasn't been utilized very well in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I'm always a fan of the surprise cash in, just because it's a surprise. It's a shock moment. It always gets a pop.
Yeah.
But it has been utilized well the times where people have, you know, announced beforehand. Those times it kind of always feels a little lackluster. My most recent idea is I think whenever Braun Strowman won the money,
that was last year.
Yeah. And I believe he was cashing in on Brock at like SummerSlam one of the Saudi pay-per-views or something.
Yeah, he held it for 70 days. Mm-hmm. He teased using it at SummerSlam.
Okay.
And then he...
Oh, that's right. He tried to use it.
Yeah.
And then he didn't. And then Roman did something.
He showed up at Hell in a Cell and announced at Hell in a Cell that he was going to use it.
Right.
And then he relinquished the briefcase on an episode of Raw after that.
Right, yeah. So, that's... Like, when it happens that way, it's kind of a dud. But
I particularly don't like when a superstar wins their first title that way. If they're a face, I should say.
I'm okay with it. Because, I guess it was Dolph a face when
Dolph was a face. CM
beat
Punk.
Del Rio for it.
Yeah, CM okay. Punk got his that way.
I don't think it was. Maybe it was his first world championship when Dean Ambrose cashed in.
Yeah,
the same night he won it.
That was his first as well.
See, I think that's the outlier, and that is one of my favorite Money in the Bank mm-hmm. cash-ins, purely just for the historical factor of Roman Reigns was the WWE champion at the beginning of the night. Seth Rollins beat him for the championship in a match, and then Dean Ambrose cashed in and beat Rollins for the championship. So literally all three members of the Shield were the WWE champion in the same night. I think that's pretty cool.
That is fun. That's kind of an exception to that rule for me. I don't like thinking back and the retrospective of CM Punk and him winning his first. I'm not a fan of that. Dean Ambrose held the briefcase for 57 minutes, according to Wikipedia.
57 minutes. Yeah. Nice.
So WrestleMania was the home of Money in the Bank, the ladder match, for a long time, and then it became its own pay-per-view, which is what's happening this Sunday. Mm. So I thought we might do something a little fun to end this show. Mm-hmm. So in a possible precursor to a new wrestling war, Upstart, All Elite Wrestling will have their inaugural pay-per-view, if you don't count All In. They're going to have theirs this month, Double or Nothing, from Las Vegas on May 25th. Mm-hmm. So in theory, you can watch both of these pay-per-views since they aren't, you know, directly at the same date and time, but they certainly are directly opposing each other as competition. So we thought that we would take a look at these important shows for their companies and compare which one has a better shot at being a success.
Okay.
So the question is, how do we want to define success?
That's
in a post ratings world, because ratings haven't mattered for a while, and now suddenly they have.
So it's interesting because I think the term success is going to be different for each show.
What's successful for WWE coming out of this pay per view?
I think successful for WWE is, you know, I guess just because I know their normal ratings they're pulling about 2 million and some change viewers for episodes of Raw. And I'm not sure what the ratings are for pay-per-views, but I would guess just around there. I think for them, a success is, you know, better than normal ratings, I guess. For AEW, for Double or Nothing, it's an entirely different beast unto itself in that this is a brand new promotion. This is their first official pay-per-view under this new umbrella of AEW, and it could set a tone for this business going forward. So I think the stakes for AEW are undoubtedly higher.
I think they are from like a legacy standpoint.
Yeah.
I think what they want most is buzz coming out of this.
Yeah.
And whether that's buzz from wrestling fans or buzz from TV networks, mm-hmm. where I feel like WWE wants to come out of this weekend with a sense that people are going to come back to TV and mm-hmm. watch it so that they don't feel as much pressure from NBC and from Fox. I feel like there's a literal, like, they have to prove that their ad revenues are worth the amount of money that was paid for them.
Right, yeah.
Because at the moment, it seems like Vince and the writing team has been very reactionary to some declining ratings in a time of year that is normally a dead time anyway, because mm-hmm. WrestleMania season is just exhausting. They are doing whatever the networks are saying they might want right now. And I don't think that's a sustainable model for them. So they have to kind of right the ship and kind of land in this post-Superstar shakeup world, too, and kind of write us in, like, what rules their programming has going forward. Mm. So which one of these two shows to you so far has more accomplished creating established storylines going into this pay-per-view?
So it's interesting. If you could see me right now, I'm a little biased. I'm sitting here wearing my Kenny Omega shirt, so there's a slight bias there. But you have to approach it from the fact that AEW, this is their first show. They don't have a weekly television program yet, so
let alone three.
Storyline build up to this show, you kind of have to really search for it. They've done some build up and on their YouTube series on being the Elite and on the Nightmare Family YouTube channel, where they do a mm-hmm. lot of the Double or Nothing lead up episodes. So they've done some stuff, but you really have to like go out of your way to find it.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, WWE, say what you will about the writing, they have weekly television programs. They have the outreach to the much wider audience right now. So personally, I think it's kind of dead even right now.
Yeah.
I don't think WWE storylines are great at the moment, but AEW is just suffering in that maybe they have better writing, but it's just it's not getting to as many people right now.
Yeah. I think there's only three matches on the AEW card that have kind of a built-in storyline that you can point to, and it's like Hangman Page and Pac, and that they both want to be like contenders for the eventual title. Mm-hmm. Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho continuing their feud, and then Cody and Dustin as brothers versus brother. Mm-hmm. And those are all really simple stories to tell, which I think they have to do because you're right, they don't have the same amount of time to build it. I think the Becky storyline is good right now, going into Money in the Bank.
Well, half of it.
Half of it's good. I really, really like the Kofi Kingston, Kevin Owens storyline now. I think that's been really engaging. And I've been really happy with Samoa Joe, Rey Mysterio. And Dominic has been
I know, right? Dominic's making his way back.
Who his father is coming back in. I love the idea of again Samoa Joe telling another wrestler who their daddy is.
Which actually weird side note tangent. So mm-hmm. for those who don't know, Dominic, Rey Mysterio's legit son. They did a storyline back in the day, and I'm sure we've talked about this, where Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero had a feud over Dominic, where the kayfabe storyline was that Eddie Guerrero was Dominic's like actual biological father, I think. Yeah.
Yep.
And like he was trying to like get custody back, and so they had a ladder match for like custody papers.
Yeah, I can't believe we didn't mention this in our ridiculous ladder matches.
I know, right?
Item they were but getting so my, was, so, was custody, Dominic.
But so my question is, within that storyline, is Dominic kayfabe like actually Eddie Guerrero's son? Like,
well, no, because Rey won
the match and got the custody papers. But like biologically, is Dominic kayfabe Eddie Guerrero's son?
They certainly lead us to believe that Eddie slept with Ray's wife.
I think within the world of kayfabe, Dominic might be a Guerrero.
I hope that this is leading to Dominic being signed in an eventual Dominic versus Ray match. They're going to be the real Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader of WWE.
Where Dominic comes out in a lowrider.
Yeah. He gets the higher ground, and it's
sorry, weird tangent. We'll go back.
I am happy to see. You mentioned this a while ago too, that you thought the shakeup was going to prevent this, but thanks to wild cards, we are going to have an ending to the Miz Shane McMahon storyline.
Yes,
think that's good. I think there is some interesting stuff, and there certainly is a all-star cast for the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. In that, Sami Zayn, Ricochet, Ali, Finn Balor, Andrade, and Randy Orton even, too, are all people that can really excel. Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre, I'm less, about them.
I'm excited for, like, a majority of the people in that match to win, so.
I think Baron Corbin will win that, honestly.
Unfortunately, I think it will be either Baron or Drew.
Yeah. I think Sammy would be really interesting with his heel gimmick.
Sammy would be so interesting. Hold on to it. I think Andrade, I think, would be the smart choice.
Yeah. Well, they're teaching him English right now because Vince and everyone backstage loves him. So they're trying to get him ready to be a real star, which I know Fox would be excited about as well. Plus, hey, we also have an AJ Styles Seth Rollins match on this card.
Oh, yes. For the Universal Championship. Yeah. And how can you not be excited about that.
That's been a fine build up so far, nothing special, but that's going to be a great
I think
match.
That's one of those matches that don't really need a story build up. Mm-hmm. It's the story is the match itself, you know.
So I just kind of ran through most of the stuff on the Money in the Bank card. There's 11 matches on that card. There are 10 on AEW Double or Nothing. Just looking at the matches, which card are you more excited for?
There might be a little bit of bias, but I'm personally excited for Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
And it's because it has that shiny new factor, you know what I mean? This is the first show for this company, and as a wrestling fan in general, I want it to succeed. I want it to do very well. A lot of my favorite wrestlers are part of AEW, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, Lucha Bros, and I have the most high hopes for that. But at the same time, hearing that card for Money in the Bank, that's not a bad card at all.
Can I tell you what the two pre-show matches are? Tony
for
Nese,
Money in the Bank?
Yeah, Tony Nese versus Daivari for the Cruiserweight title, and then Daniel Bryan and Rowan versus the Usos.
On the pre-show?
That's a stacked...
You got D-Bry on the pre-show?
I actually think that this is one of the best cards that they've turned in a while.
Well, I think it's in direct response. They know they're going to have, for the first time in 18 years, some competition.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned for Roman versus Elias. Hopefully that will be a short match.
Hopefully, yeah.
And then I think Lacey Evans versus Becky Lynch could be like a schmoz. It might not be an actual match, you know.
Yeah.
One of those two will be more story than match.
Yeah, I'm not too excited about the Lacey Evans match, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But a point between the two shows that I think is another thing. I think for a lot of the internet wrestling fans, the hardcore wrestling fans like ourselves, we are there's a lot of hype for Double or Nothing, and I am super excited for the show, and I think another thing that AEW is at a disadvantage here, that naturally, I mean, going against WWE, that they're going to have to somehow make up for, is that a majority of their matches are relatively unknown participants. You have your names like Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega, Dustin and Cody. Maybe most people are aware of their names outside of Gold Dust and Stardust, but So they have a lot of relatively unknown names. Honestly, going through that Double or Nothing card, there's a lot of people I've never even heard of myself.
Yeah. They're betting a lot of being these people will now be looked at as AEW wrestlers because we know even the diehardest fans have not seen these people in their regional and small promotions, which exactly. I think is smart. Yeah. They're going to immediately build some new stars.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's absolute excitement, but it's just another hurdle they're going to have to jump over.
Yeah. As of recording, there are still 7 spots up for grabs in that Battle Royal Double or Nothing thing they're going to do. What cool hot free agents do you think might show up realistically on Double or Nothing?
Well, so I know the stipulation for the over-the-budget Battle Royal is that the winner will get a future AEW World Championship match.
Yeah.
And I think there's some pretty big names out there. One that I can think of off the top of my head might be one Jon Moxley.
Yeah, that would be nuts. A lot of people have said that Jon Moxley, formerly Dean Ambrose, he was believed, and I think we both believe this too, that he was going to legit take time off and do non-wrestling stuff. And then he almost immediately, after being out of his contract, opened up a Twitter account and put out a video that seemed to have some cryptic stuff suggesting maybe that he would be in Las Vegas, which is his legit hometown, where this pay-per-view is happening. I almost feel like if that's not what AEW was trying to do, then it's unfortunate that Jon Moxley has put that stuff out because there's no way to avoid it.
That's a potential, I think. But also I've heard rumors that in the event Jon Moxley has signed with AEW, they may want to wait to debut him until the first episode of their TV deal.
Yeah, that makes the most sense to me.
That's the rumor I've heard, and that does make sense. Like, what better way to draw eyes to your new weekly TV show than having a name like that show up?
Mm-hmm. I think we could see Joey Ryan show up.
Oh, in yes. That. Good call.
I know WWE has actually given him an offer, but I just don't see him being there. I'm going to throw out one that I think would make you happy or retroactively very upset. I think that one Sean Spears might show up, who we might know better as Ty Dillinger.
Oh, yes.
I think he's showing up, and I think you would be upset about losing your bet if he wins the Battle Royal.
If he wins the Battle Royal and then subsequently the belt, I'm going to be so angry.
Yeah, you're going to have to be like, can I get some of that money back?
But I do hope he shows up in AEW. Mm-hmm. That would be really great.
Here's the biggest hurdle I think that Double or Nothing has compared to WWE is that it's going to be insanely more difficult to find and watch.
Well,
how are you going to watch it, Tyler?
Let me know how I'm going to watch Double or Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some research into how I'll be able to watch their weekly television, which just recently it's been released that they will be airing on TNT.
Yeah, they're part of the upfronts for the cable networks this week. Yeah,
I've done some research into how I'll be able to watch their TNT show, and it's not going to be easy, but I think I can make it happen.
Yeah, I'll give you my YouTube TV login if you need it.
Is TNT on YouTube TV? Because I was there's.
Yes, I think it is. Oh man, I'm
there's
mad
a streaming
if it's
service
not.
That I can't think of the name that has it. That's like $25 a month, and I was like, that's kind of steep just
it's
to watch
like Sling
one
like
weekly
that.
Wrestling show. Yeah. But I think supposedly TNT is also on PlayStation View,
yes.
Which is one of their cable network apps that they have.
Mm-hmm. I'll be
so
watching
I'm gonna do
it,
a little more research and figure out how to do it. But
TV.
as to watching Double or Nothing, I'm still not sure how I'm gonna do that.
Well, here's how you can. It's gonna be on Bleacher Report Live, which is like a Bleacher Report's extension for where you can do a la carte watching sporting events that are otherwise behind a paywall. So you could watch like a Champions League soccer match for like $9. The problem is that this basically becomes a traditional pay-per-view model for AEW, and that Double or Nothing is $49.99 right now.
Oh, man.
It's steep. Especially now that we're used to paying $10 for
I know. We're so spoiled. Like,
so that's going
to
be...
used to pay those prices back in the day.
Yeah. It's going to be a real tough sell, but I think it's the only option they have right now.
Yeah.
I think they need to make sure once they have the TV that the TV becomes more important than the pay-per-view then maybe for a little bit, if that is going to be how expensive it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
They also have one kind of... TNT is great. It's basically the same exact numbers of viewers weekly that Raw has, or not that Raw has, that USA Network has. The problem is that TNT's bread and butter is the NBA. And like they're making so much money from having NBA Game of the Week rights. And it looks like either AEW will have to go up head-to-head against SmackDown on Tuesday nights. Or I guess that SmackDown's going to Friday, though, so I guess it's fine.
Okay.
And or they're going to have to be on Wednesdays, where for certain months of the year, the show will go from 2 hours to 1 hour because of being preempted by basketball.
Yeah, which, I mean, you're far more versed in this than I am. Are there NBA games usually on Tuesdays that air on TNT? I assume there probably be games every night.
Yeah, but that's their, like, game of the week. Like, that's, like, where they bring in the Emmy-winning TNT crew with Charles Barkley and Shaq. And, like, okay. I'm sure you've seen, like, that before. Like,
their
studio show that's a big hit. I believe that it's Tuesdays that they have that, and so it's going to be, you know, mid-November on through, like, June, depending on... I mean, there will be certain weeks where they won't have to worry about it, but come the playoffs, like, that's going to be...
Which would also be tough for them, being that they're planning to begin weekly television about October, so having a few weeks of television and then having it to... you know, change times or move around like so soon after debuting could be pretty detrimental.
Also, maybe they'll go to a similar pay-per-view model to that of NXT. I know NXT doesn't have pay-per-views technically, but maybe they'll do 4 to 6 a year, which would maybe be more sustainable.
They already have their next pay-per-view planned for July?
Yeah, the Jacksonville.
I believe, the Fight for the Fallen.
Yeah. I think that's more for investors, honestly, to do a Jacksonville-based show and maybe to keep people fresh and like try out some stuff some more. Because this is also going to be like, what is their presentation going to look like? I know that the cons have spent a lot of money specifically on that end, but this is going to be the first time. It's very possible Double or Nothing could be a show that, even if the action is good, that there are just so many kinks to work out, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling if it is the cons who are saying, don't worry, we'll take care of production, that it might be the same kind of growing pains that when Warner acquired WCW, it might be that same kind of pains where you have a bunch of people filming the show who have never filmed wrestling before.
Yeah.
And like they don't understand why something they're doing that in any other filming would be good being bad and vice versa.
Which, I mean, I guess we would hope that whatever crew they utilize for All In might be on board or be the crew they're utilizing for Double or Nothing.
Yeah, that was the Ring of Honor crew.
Oh, that was Ring of Honor, was it?
Yeah, it was mostly like Ring of Honor's production staff. That's not going to look like that.
All right, well, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll have to you know, steal some money from someone so we can afford to watch that pay-per-view. Yeah. But I plan on watching.
Yeah, so I do want to backtrack super quick.
Yeah.
Just because it just clicked in my head, and I was like, how could we not mention this? Another massive name who could potentially show up at Double or Nothing is none other than CM Punk.
Yeah, I feel like if they're going to get him, I feel like that's another one that you wait till
a television.
Like you can do a Ty Dillinger, you can do a Joey Ryan right now, you know.
I think if somehow they get both, like Jon Moxley and CM Punk, if were I booking it, I would do one and then the other.
Yeah.
debut Moxley at Double or Nothing, debut Punk on television or something.
Yeah,
like
I
that.
Think that would be the move. Yeah. So if we see Moxley, which is still, I think, probably more unlikely than likely, I'm just going to assume that we're going to see CM Punk.
CM Punk confirmed, yeah. Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think we've hit everything that we planned out to talk about. So yep, yep. What's Turbo Mansion doing right now?
Oh, boy. So we are... still working on the last song of the mm-hmm. second album right now. We've had a little bit of a hiatus. We got busy. We had some things to do. Yeah. Some people went on vacation and stuff. So mm-hmm. we're getting
some
back
had
in
to
there.
Do laundry. So
yep, exactly. That really exactly.
Puts
so
the kibosh on it. Yeah,
we're getting back in there. We're working on stuff. We actually have a show coming up on Monday night.
Ooh.
That will be at the Garden Grove Brewery if you are in the Richmond, Virginia area. Mm-hmm. About 6 o'clock if you want to stop by and see us. That would be super awesome. But yes, you can just find us at our normal places. We're on iTunes, Spotify, YouTubes, all that good stuff.
Yeah, wonderful. Keep listening to Harper Audio Presents if you want to learn more about audiobooks.
Yes, yes.
The next episode that we have is coming out on Wednesday, and it is an interview with one of the two authors of the Androma Saga, Sacha Alsberg, and you can hear me feel really sad because she is a New York Times bestselling author, and she's 22 years old.
Oh, so. My God.
So, you can hear wow. my sadness. There's a moment that is going to be cut out of that interview, so I'm going to talk about it here for a moment,
yeah.
where we're talking about Alexa and about AI in general, mm-hmm. and I mentioned that I watch Jeopardy every night because they've been doing a tournament this week where Alexa is like sponsoring it and like uh-huh. read some stuff. So I was trying to get to that and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I watch Jeopardy every night. And she goes, oh my God, are you an old man? and like, she meant it funny. And I was like, so like stopped. And then she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
I don't see why you're cutting this from the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. A reminder, as always, if you want us to answer your questions in the Kayfabe 5000, which will return soon, although our next few episodes are going to be dedicated to the top 10 wrestlers and matches of the year. So mm-hmm. so get us that question in the Kayfabe 5000, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at adowrestling, or you can email them to us, muchadowrestling@gmail.com. We also got a Facebook group, Much Ado About Wrestling. You can find the show on Stitcher, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts, and you can leave us a review while you're there. Hey, if you leave us a review right now and take a picture and email it to us, then you get much improved odds at winning the sweepstakes when you vote for the wrestler match of the year, which mm-hmm. we're giving away a $50 Pro Wrestling Tees gift card. That's like two shirts.
You can wear the same shirt. That. Fancy new AEW sweatshirts yeah. they have.
Tyler's wearing it right now. He just put it on over his Kenny Omega shirt.
And it's
I might be biased.
I do buy it.
Great.
That's a great sweatshirt. I do have it.
As always, Turbo Mansion does the theme song for our show, and you can get all of their music on your Bandcamp. Is that the main space?
Right. It's there, yeah. Spotify, it's there. Wherever you want.
It's there. And as always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
And dig it.
Oh, you're so sick.
I have to protect the voice. Gotta protect the voice today.